Fighters from the Syrian Democratic Forces celebrated yesterday in the streets of Raqqa, the de facto capital of the ISIS terrorist group since 2014. As of Tuesday, most of that city is under the control of U.S.-backed Syrian forces. A handful of ISIS fighters remain. U.S. Army Colonel and spokesman Ryan Dillon had this to say yesterday about ISIS.
We've devastated their networks, targeted and eliminated their leaders at all levels. We've degraded their ability to finance their operations. Their flow of foreign recruits has gone from about 1,500 fighters a month down to near zero today. Now, in ISIS's so-called capital in Raqqa, we see the terrorist group on the verge of a devastating defeat at the hands of our Syrian Democratic Force partners.
Victory has come at a high cost. Much of Raqqa has been destroyed, with over 1,000 civilians killed in American-led airstrikes and 270,000 residents displaced. And pushing ISIS out of Raqqa does not mean the brutal terror group is defeated. With more is Rukmini Callimachi, correspondent covering ISIS for our partner, The New York Times. Rukmini, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Todd.
How big of a victory is this for anti-ISIS forces in Raqqa?
I would say, in combined with the loss of Mosul, the loss of Raqqa is a big deal. It's a symbolic hit to the Islamic State. This is their de facto capital. It was also the seat of the foreign fighters, the American, Canadian, European, you know, fighters who joined this group. The majority of them seemed to flock to Raqqa. And finally, it was the locus of their external operations, in the sense that this is where the foreign fighters that ended up going back to Europe to attack were trained and originally came from. So yes, it's a big deal. But on the flip side of that, Todd, you'll never hear me say that this is the end of ISIS.
So more than a moral victory in Raqqa, but what's to prevent ISIS from simply relocating all of these functions that you just described, being able to import and export fighters, finance, and all the rest of it?
That's exactly it. And as we know, in fact, they already have. So as of last year, in 2016, I wrote a story with my colleague Eric Schmidt. And as of that point in time, so over a year ago, officials in the intelligence community were telling us that ISIS had already relocated hundreds of fighters to the European Union and hundreds more to Turkey. And Turkey is the piece of this puzzle that people rarely talk about and often forget about. Turkey is ostensibly a NATO ally, but we've had very little impact on how that country carries out the war on ISIS. And in fact, we know that ISIS fighters have been able to go in and out of Turkey with some level of impunity, and they've also been able to create safe houses and bases for themselves. Just recently, a major airline plot was dismantled in Australia, where a person was trying to carry a bomb onto a plane, and we learned that the components for the explosive that were in that bomb had actually been shipped from an ISIS member in Turkey.
So ISIS fighters spread to Turkey, to Europe, and that's not necessarily new. But when we look back at Syria and Iraq, Rukmini, what does losing territory mean to ISIS? So many times in the past with terrorist organizations, we've seen them shift tactics and become insurgency groups again, melting into the towns and into the cities and simply shifting away from military confrontation.
For sure. But before we even touch on that, let's not forget that the caliphate is still not over. So just in Iraq and Syria, ISIS still holds around 10,000 square kilometers of land. That's roughly 4,000 square miles. That's almost the size of Connecticut. So that's still a significant piece of land. But yes, of course, this is a group that began as an insurgency. It was an insurgency just a couple of years ago. So they have surely not forgotten how to be insurgents. The main thing that they are losing by losing all of this territory is the enormous amount of money that they were able to make from taxing the population under their control and from mining the resources in that area, whether it was agriculture or oil.
Rukmini, are there still communities, though, in Syria and Iraq ready to accommodate or at least tolerate ISIS fighters, if not ruling their towns and taxing them, sort of blending into the regular population?
I think for sure. When I was in Mosul, I spent 2 months in Mosul this summer, and I was there the day that the city fell. And weeks after, literally months after even, I would be going through the east or the western part of the city. I would stop in to a police station or to a military base to interview a commander, and I would find out that just that morning they had picked up another ISIS fighter who was hiding in this person's house or who was being harbored by this particular family. So to be sure, this is something that's uncomfortable to talk about, but there are communities among Sunnis in that area that do believe in their ideology and that still support them.
And that's going to be a major thing to reckon with going forward, isn't it? I mean, if fighters want to melt into towns and towns are overall sympathetic, rooting those fighters out becomes extremely difficult.
It becomes extremely difficult, and it gets complicated when the way in which the governing power behaves is not always on the up and up. So already we're seeing accusations of torture, of mistreatment by the Shia militias. In recent weeks, we've seen large numbers of ISIS fighters, around 1,000 in the town of Hawija in Iraq, and around 500 in the town of Tal Afar, also in Iraq. These are two towns that fell after Mosul, but before Raqqa. These 1,500 fighters basically turned themselves in to the Peshmerga troops. These are Kurdish troops within Iraq. And what we learned after they turned themselves in is that they had instructions from their ISIS emirs to not turn themselves in to the Shia militias because they knew that those people would either kill them or hurt them.
Well, Rukmini, you describe Mosul and Raqqa and a lot of smaller towns that have been
Yes.
liberated from ISIS.
Yeah.
Many of them are almost completely destroyed. What does reconstruction look like? Is it even possible right now?
That's a really important point, Todd. So one of the questions that I've had throughout this process is, yes, we've removed Raqqa, we've removed Mosul from ISIS's grasp, but at what cost? I was in Western Mosul on the day that the city was declared liberated. There were celebrations that rang out really across the world, from the White House to the fighters who were in the city. And I couldn't help but think, as I was walking through the completely destroyed streets of the old city, that this might be a town, at least the western part of it, that may never come back. It looked like the streets that I saw in Haiti after the catastrophic earthquake a couple of years ago.
Rukmini Callimachi covering ISIS for the New York Times. Rukmini, always great to have you.
Thank you, Todd.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.